All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of Saber Sims DFS Office Hours. Today is Tuesday, August 12th of 2025. Looking ahead here, we had a two-game League of Legends slate earlier this morning, and then we also had 16 tennis matches get underway. So good luck to all of you playing those slates that are already in progress. For the rest of the day, we have a two-game WNBA slate, as well as a 12-game MLB slate. So it should be a fun day of DFS. For those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew. I'm one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS-related questions. Get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual sport channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim teams. Can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we do this show on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. So tune in any one of those days to get your questions answered. All right. With that said, let's get SaberSim pulled up here. Had a couple questions come in prior to the show, so we will start there and then just kind of see where we go. So we're just going to work from the top down. Duckman said, could you briefly cover in flashback what Giant Squid did different yesterday? He was all over the leaderboard in the main slate. Yeah, we could totally do a little bit of a flashback look here. You know, we always do like slate demos. What if we just did a flashback demo and kind of mix it up here? So that's definitely a good way to get this kicked off. So let's go back to yesterday. We'll go to the main slate. All right, we're going to go over to contests. Okay, so what do we want to check out? Let's maybe start with the 111. You know, two big 150 maxes yesterday. Maybe we'll look at both of these. Let's see where Giant Squid was at. Don't see him in like the top 30-ish here. Let's try the $5. See if we can find him lurking. Sometimes these bigger contests take a little bit longer to load. Try and be patient with it. Here, right, I just refreshed it one time and then it worked. So that's good. So it doesn't look like he shipped any of the main contests yesterday, but nevertheless, we can review his lineups. So let's go over to users. Let's go over to 150 maxers. I'm assuming he maxed it. And then let's see if we can find Giant Squid here. So 7% positive sim ROI. That is like he's right in the top 10 to 15 sim ROIers. So a couple people in the double digits here. I think his sim ROI is like probably fine. Some of his metrics. So 49.7 average salary. So kind of high. No dupes. 94.9 sim average score. A lot of these 96, 98, 93, 94, 94. So he's right in like the band we talk about, and he's like 94.9. So he's like pushing 95. So if for me, right, I would say, okay, as long as your sim ROI is like, but, or your sim average score is between like 93 and 98, you're like probably fine here. And his is basically 95. So I think that's like totally okay. So let's see how he did. So I would click the plus icon on his name over here on the side, and then that'll highlight his lineups. And then it'll also show me what his exact exposures were. So I'll usually line these up next to like actual ownership. First thing I want to do is see what type of stacks he played. So played a lot of, nothing like that much, right? 20% the most, but 4 2s, 5s, 5 2s, 4 3s, 4 4s. He does play a couple 3 stacks. You know, he lets a couple of 3 stacks slip in here, 5 out of 150. But, you know, the majority of his portfolio is 4 and 5 stacks. Doesn't look like he's doing too much here to like favor one versus the other. We go over to team stacks. One thing I like to do here is add in projected runs. I just like to see, you know, how people play like some of the chalkier teams. So he got to a lot of Tampa Bay. He was pretty under on St. Louis. Kind of a stand on Minnesota and maybe Arizona. You know, both teams like sub 4.2 run total and then double-digit exposures. Like, you know, lower projected runs, but these two teams kind of stand out. Minnesota, Arizona, and then bigger stand on like Tampa Bay. See, like, I expect like double digits to some of these other like 5 projected run teams, but when a team has like a full run less and more exposure than them, now that becomes kind of interesting. So I would say Minnesota was like probably his like biggest stand on the slate. I like to come in and look at some of their 5 stacks and other things. Like here, yeah, now you can like really tell that Minnesota was like a big stand for him, because Minnesota is twice as exposed as any other team at the 5 stack position. So this is one of those where like when they do good, he has like a lot of shares of them, and then they're low owned. A lot of Yankees 4 stacks, Tampa Bay 3s, Tampa Bay 2s. So, you know, it looks like he has like a lot of Tampa Bay, but he doesn't really have that much. He has a lot of Tampa Bay 3 stacks, some 4 stacks. Yankees 4 stacks kind of sneak up here. They weren't like a team that was like totally catching my eye right off the bat, but a lot of Yankees 4 stacks. Those are all his top 3s. So like 3 stacking Tampa Bay, 5 stacking Minnesota, 4 stacking Yankees are like kind of what we're seeing here. Now, this is always like a good exercise to do either like in the morning, the day after a slate, or just basically anytime before you start reviewing today's slate, right? Because any slate context, clues, ideas, weather, all that type of stuff is easier to remember before you start, you know, muddying the water and trying to remember which slate had this and like which slate had that, right? So that's one thing here is, you know, the sooner you could do this, really, the better, but the flashback doesn't load until the next day. So that's one thing I mentioned. Going over to actual players. So I'll sort by ownership. I normally like to see like, hey, how did he handle, you know, some of the chalkier plays? And looks like he was like really under on the chalkiest pitchers. And it seemed like that benefited him like very, very well. So the top 3 highest owned pitchers, Yamamoto, Crochet, Eovaldi, he is half the field on Yamamoto, half the field on Crochet, less negative leverage on Eovaldi. That's another column you can like add in here, right? Leverage. And we'll bring that over here. So the other thing is leverage is going off of the ownership bucket. So I might actually change that. Okay, there we go. All right. So then kind of avoids these top 3. You know what? Something else, I just keep adding stuff. Something else I might want to see is like value. Like how do these pitchers grade out value-wise? Let's move that. Let's put projection over here. We can move actual ownership now. Okay, that looks fine. All right, so if you get like, there's just like so many different ways to like chop up this information, right? It's like, okay, first, how did he handle the highest projected pitchers, right? Okay, he's under on the top 3 projected. Now, actually, the top 4 projected, right? Because he has 0 exposure to Logan Webb. Okay, how did he handle the highest value pitchers, right? We see a little bit more positive here, right? Some small positive leverage to Mikolas, his biggest stand, like one of his biggest stands here was Will Warren, and Will Warren's second highest value pitched pretty good. So I'm sure this benefited him very nicely here. But it's hard to say, like, okay, yeah, he just like jammed the value, because that's not really true. Because when you look here, right, he has like two other big stands on, if we sort by like positive leverage, he has two other big stands. Wow, I didn't even see Jeffrey Springs. Maybe this is why Duckman saw like him on the leaderboard, maybe like earlier in the slate. And then I didn't see that he like did that well, because he took a really huge stand on Jeffrey Springs here, and Springs did like very poorly, and it didn't work out. Kind of interesting that he's like taking both sides a little bit of this game. Seemed like he took the Springs side more, and then kind of hedged with like the Tampa Bay 3 stacks a little bit, you know. He wasn't like jamming Tampa Bay 5s and Springs. He's like, okay, I'm going to take Springs, but then, you know, if Tampa Bay does get there, I'm going to take like some 3-mans just to like protect myself. So I'd say that's a little bit more like the angle I saw there. The positive leverage on Zebby Matthews and Pepio here, I don't know where it comes from, to be honest, because if you sort by projection, these guys are kind of low. And then if you sort by value, they're also kind of low, right? The only thing with this is that he did have a lot of exposure to Minnesota batters. So it could be a situation where like he's very much valuing correlation. Like correlation is weighted like very, very heavily for him. And he's saying, okay, like when Minnesota gets there, like I want them to also have the pitcher because of the opportunities for win bonus. And then at his salary of like $7,300, you know, a 4-point win bonus could be like very, very impactful, right? So, and then that could also be true for like Pepio in like the 3 stacks that we saw, right? We saw like 26% Tampa Bay stacks, and then he has 16% Pepio. So it's like, okay, you know, I think there's some amount of team stacking going on here, right? And we can actually see this, I think, if we zone in on Matthews and click the plus icon for him, then it's going to filter his lineups further. And then let's say we want to go and look at some of these, right? Okay, so like this one's not true. So some of these aren't true, right? My hypothesis that I was forming, where it's like, okay, well, he's heavy on Minnesota. Maybe he's also playing, you know, a lot of Minnesota with Zebby Matthews. That doesn't seem to be the case here. So some of these lineups, okay, I will say this. Some of these lineups are very high salary. So I see 1, 2, 3, 4. So like out of his top 5 lineups with Zebby Matthews, 4 of them are 49.9, right? So that kind of tells me that there weren't like a lot of other options at this. How do I say this? I almost think his batter decisions impacted which pitchers he got to more than the other way around. I think like he almost got to like some of these batters first, like the D-backs, but the D-backs were like another stand that he took. Gets to like the D-backs first, and then the builder's like, okay, who's like a pitcher that like we can work with here in this range? And then it ends up being Zebby Matthews. I don't know if he like got to him specifically, but these are just some of my interpretations, right? Because we don't really know how he did it or why he did it. We're trying to kind of piece it together and put some of the clues together. I was like, okay, let's look at the projection. Okay, let's look at the value, you know? None of those kind of made sense. All right, so like, why is he getting to him? Maybe it's salary, you know? You're trying to like a little bit reverse engineer it so you can kind of model, mimic, and master it. But he almost seems like a somewhat of a salary relief play. And he's kind of in the same range as like Springs, right? And then I think Pepio was like a little bit higher at like 8K. But I think like he ended up paying down for some pitchers. And if you're going to like fade the top three, right, you're going to fade Yamamoto, Crochet, Eovaldi, you almost have to play somebody, right? And I think like maybe he decided to play them. Maybe the builder got to them. But when he got off of the top owned guys, these are just the players that he got to. And it looks like builder opted for like salary relief pitchers and then to jam some like higher salary bats like Marte, like Carroll, right? 6K Carroll, 5,800 Marte. These are, you know, very expensive batters to fit into your lineup. Judge. So those are like my best interpretations of this so far. And then we'll go to batters real quick. Go over to exposure. No batter in more than 20% of his lineups. So very, very spread out at the batter position. Some leverages, right? Minnesota, Tampa Bay on some of, but I mean, it's not like that much. These guys came in like 5% owned. He has like 17%. So nothing crazy here, but some double digit leverage seems to be okay. But yeah, I mean, those are all my thoughts on Giant Squid's lineups from yesterday. I think the most interesting thing was like the very hard stance against the highest owned pitchers of all players, right? Because pitchers are generally a little bit normally distributed, a little bit better at hitting their projection. And all these guys sucked yesterday. I mean, Eovaldi 0.65, Crochet 4.2, Yamamoto 3.3, and somehow, you know, Squid was half the field on almost all three of them here. And was negative leverage on all three. The only blemish was taking all of that exposure that he didn't spend on them and then spending it on Jeffrey Springs, which is unfortunate because there was some opportunity there. All right, cool. I think we knocked out. Okay, so Duck said this was mainly in FanDuel, however. So one quick thing, we do not have flashback for FanDuel. FanDuel doesn't allow us to download the contest data the same way that DraftKings does. So unfortunately, we can't get the contest data from FanDuel, so we can't flashback it. But I'm pretty sure his ideas are similar across slates. I'd be shocked to see that he's fading the top pitchers in DraftKings and then slamming them on FanDuel. That'd be very, very shocking to me. All right. I see a question here about Squid. So we'll just stick with this real quick. What unique do you recommend for classic MLB on ROI? Do you think what gets you close to winning just like Giant Squid? Thanks, Drew. Let's get us SoCal guys on top of the leaderboard. Yeah, no doubt. So with the uniques, right? If you're opting for uniques, it's really going to come down to, and we can just like show this. Let's go back to today. All right, we're loading up MLB Main for today. And we'll go over to build. All right, let's build 500 lineups. Okay, cool. So while this builds, I'm going to touch on this other question. Hey, Andrew, thanks for yesterday. Rethinking contest selection as a whole for MLB. This question is for that, but could apply to other sports. So I'm curious what your opinion is in general. I think I remember Jordan in an NFL video from the past saying when he selects contests, he makes sure the top prize is at minimum 2x his wager for the slate. I tend to make sure my contest top prize at least matches my wager as practice across all sports. Wondering how you feel about that for MLB as well as other sports. Guess I'm wondering if I should go back to playing contests like Dime Times if my slate wager is 50 to 100 $1,000, for example. Okay, good question. So I heard something from Shady Advice one time, and he said something along the lines of when he had access to low stakes contests, his ROI long term was closer to about like 30%. And then when he didn't have access to low stakes contests anymore, and he had to start playing contests above $3, and you know, got out of like those gated contests, his ROI went down to somewhere closer to around like 10%. That tells me, you know, I think it's like okay to play contests that are less than your wager, or that don't meet it, or where the top prize is low. Because like, if you get enough action in them over time, then like, you know, let's say those are real numbers, right? Like, we'll just like assume the problem isn't that when you win $10, or when you win the dime time, you win $30. The problem is how many dime times can you actually enter? Because if your expectation is to turn a 30% profit, your only goal should be to play as many dime times as you possibly can. It shouldn't matter what the first place prize is. So if you're seeing like good enough sim ROIs in dime times where it seems worth playing, I would play them. You know, you shouldn't expect it to like pay your entry fees for the night, but if you can play enough of them, because they do respawn, right? And respawn means like it fills and they open up another one, You know, you could come back for breakfast, come back for lunch, check the lobby, you know, enter. You can probably get, I don't know, if you like tried really hard, I bet you could enter like at least 10 dime times. And then, you know, you're playing it kind of with like a different goal, right? You're like, hey, I'm just trying to be profitable in this contest long term. I'm not trying to like win it tonight. You know what I mean? Like if you're playing like the $5, 150 max, like, yeah, you know, you're trying to win like that 50K. Your thought process might be like a little bit different there, but if their ROIs are good, then hey, I would continue to play them. All right, let's get back to this question from Chris about uniques here. So we're in the post build. We're using uniques, right? Okay. So when I use uniques, I do lean heavily on the aggregate metrics, right? Because the aggregate metrics are going to help me figure out if I'm doing too much or not enough when it comes to making adjustments, right? So looking at uniques, looking at exposures, and then the other thing I'm looking at is leverage, which I want to find here. There it is. Bring my leverage over. We don't need two projections. So the trick to this, right, is, okay, I'm looking at this. I see that I have, you know, high leverages, 30%, 20s, right? If you're okay with that, right? If you like look at this, you're like, oh, well, you know, the high leverage is like two some pitchers, and I kind of like these pitchers, like I'm good with it. Great. You know, if it feels too high, then it could be an opportunity to change it, right? Like, okay, I look at this, like, I don't know if I want my top exposed batter to be like the six hitter from, you know, the Rays or something like that. You kind of have to have a feel for this, and you'll learn this over time. But the trick to uniques is what number here matches your risk tolerance the best. And then you want to use the aggregate metrics, like the projection at 99, ROI at 28, to decide, hey, you know, have I gone too far with my adjustments, right? So like here, I make a change to 5 uniques, projection still at 99, ROI went down 2%, but now my top exposed hitter is 30% instead of 35. Okay, well, actually, I want to go a little bit further. I want to try 6. Okay, my ROI went down to 25%, but now I don't have any batter above 20%. So I went from 35% highest exposed batter to 20% highest exposed batter, losing only, let me go back to one you need to check, 3.4% ROI. That is like totally worthwhile change if you don't like these exposures to begin with. But if you're like, hey, I'm totally fine with the exposures, like they're cool with me, then okay, you know, leave it, right? But I think that there's never going to be like, I was saying you want to try and get some diversification if you can get it at a low cost. And here, like a 3% ROI difference to me is a very low price to pay to guarantee 6 out of 10 players in every lineup that you're playing, if you're playing 20 lineups tonight, are different from one another. So those are my thoughts there with uniques specifically. All right. Looks like a little conversation here from Hockey Cards Plus. Could be some other useful information for Junk Dog for this contest selection question. A lot of good questions today. Knocked out a flashback demo, knocked out a slate demo here with uniques. I think we are all set. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow, Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern for our next show. So until then, everybody, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.